Please forgive the sound quality on this particular recording. Enjoy anyway.
Hello, all you beautiful spirits. You are listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM, and also live streaming online at WAIF883.org. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today for our weekly show called Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. We focus here on personal and spiritual growth, on spirituality rather than religion. And we explore ways to actually reclaim the connection and the communication with our own higher selves, with our own inner divinity, and with the power that comes through that connection. Each week I share with you workable, proven methods for experiencing greater peace, greater love, joy, and connection, and how to remove those internal, usually unconscious, obstacles that have actually blocked our connection with that divine source of all life. I believe that it is our God-given birthright to experience inner joy, peace, and unconditional love, to actually feel whole in body, in mind, and in spirit. And if that's what you want, then you're in the right place. And I hope that you and all of your friends join us to learn how you can begin living the life you've always wanted to live. My name is Reverend Louisa Dyer. I am an interfaith and metaphysical minister and life coach. And my passion has always been spiritual connection, along with sharing what I've learned in this wild and crazy life I've lived, about being happier, healthier, and more at peace inside. And so each week on Inner Divinity, we focus on what works, what actually helps, what really matters, so that we can have not only the energy, but the inspiration to begin living in the ways that we've always wanted to live. I know that each and every one of us is a divinely created being. And that divine spark of life, it's alive in each and every one of us. I know that because without it, we wouldn't be living. We would be what we call dead. We wouldn't be breathing, living, walking, talking. And because of that inner spark of life, that God spark, that inner divinity, we have the choice, and we also have the power to bring ourselves up. Sometimes we need a little help, but we can rise up out of depression, out of addiction, anger, grief, any suffering that we may have been experiencing. We can come up out of it. I know that because I've done it, and I've watched countless others do it as well. And so I really hope that you join me here every Wednesday as we tap into the power and the beauty and the divine love that actually is animating all forms of life, including yours and mine. There's never really anything that we need to get or gain or even do in order to feel that inner peace or happiness. There's really only stuff that we have to let go of, the stuff that has blocked our awareness of that God energy inside of us. You can call that your higher self, or you can call it Great Spirit, or unconditional love, or divine energy. It doesn't really matter what you call it, but it really does matter if you call on it. Because that divine power that lives in your heart and mine and in everyone else's, that divine power is actually ours as soon as we claim it. And that's really what this show is all about. And so I really want to thank you for listening. And I'd also like to let you know that if you would like some help with getting in touch with that higher self, that inner spirit inside of you. There is a free guided meditation on my website. There's also a whole lot of free information and other tools on my various websites. And you're invited to check those out if you would like to. LuisaDyer.com, LuisaDyer.net, and also TheWowProcess.com. Lots of information on there if you want it. There's also a Facebook page for this show by the same name, Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. So if you're on Facebook and you'd like to connect, please do so. I'd love to hear any comments you have about what we've had on the show or what you'd like to see on the show. And I've also been inviting people to share their personal transformational stories, aha moments, anything that's happened that has made you come alive or recognize yourself as the divine being that you are, anything that has really turned your life around for the better. I've discovered over the years that when we hear one another's transformational stories, it wakes us up in a way that just reading an article just doesn't do. And so I invite you to share those stories, and that Facebook page or any of those websites is a way to get in touch with me. And let's see if you would like to be on the radio, either by the phone or come in the station if you're in the area. And so we begin each week with a little bit of music to uplift our spirits, to really begin to bring body, mind, and spirit into a greater harmony. And I also recommend that you let the body move if it really wants to. Because when the body's moving with music, it begins to feel more strongly the spirit that's animating the body. Enjoy.
Who are you, a child of life? What are you, a daily expression of their light? When is the time?
Right now, forever will be.
Where?
Inside of me.
How?
Standing as one.
When I exist, I am a child of light.
appearance. We heard Standing as One is a Child of Light by Faith Rivero. It's when we stand as one, we can feel the sacredness of all of life. And what we're all about on this show is tapping into the beauty and the power, the love, the life that is inside of us, that comes from the life that created this whole entire universe. I happen to call that God. You are welcome to call that whatever you would like to. But it's important to call on it. That divine source of all life. That's what makes the sun comes up. That's what makes every one of us breathe. And when we consciously tap into that divine energy that lives in the core of our beings, it feels good. And we begin to actually wake up. And in that process, what happens is we begin to feel happier and healthier and lead lives that have more meaning for us. Because if we're happier and healthier in body, in mind, and in spirit, then we interact in the world in a different way than when we don't feel so good. And when we can actually welcome our connection with that divine spark of life that's inside of us and do whatever it is that is required for us to do in order to be in touch with it, then we really do begin to wake up. And life is so different when we are awake and aware than it is when we are sleeping. And so every week what we do here is we talk about wonderful, amazing ways for us to do that. We talk about things that are in our way and how to get rid of them. We talk about things that inspire us and how to tap more into that inspiration. And what we're going to be talking about today, because it is December, first of all, it's 12-12-12, in case anybody hasn't noticed that, which is the last time we're ever going to have three dates like that, where they're all the same. I don't know, that seems pretty interesting to me. But December is typically a month full of good cheer and holidays, and I wanted to talk about that a little bit, because I've heard people upset about the word when people say happy holidays, and I just wanted to talk about that a minute, because the word holiday actually comes from an old English word, which means holy day, and it's been around since the 12th century, so there's nothing not Christian about that. What it is to me when I say happy holidays, actually I usually say happy holy days, because December is so full of holy days. One of the reasons that I am an interfaith minister is because I value every spiritual tradition that there is, because I know that there is one God, and that God has a lot of different names in a lot of different cultures throughout a lot of different time. And I personally don't think it matters what you call that, but it matters that you call on it. And so in December especially, we have a lot of holy days from a lot of different traditions. And so probably for 20 years, for the whole of December, I say happy holy days. And just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, this year on Saturday, December the 8th, was Bodhi Day, which is a Buddhist holy day celebration, but it was also the day that Hanukkah began, which is a Jewish celebration. And Hanukkah actually lasts for 8 days, I do believe. And I'm very thrilled because today I'm going to have a good friend of mine who I think of as, oh, I actually think of her as a Jewish scholar, but she won't let me call her that. She calls herself a former Orthodox Jew who teaches, and I'll have her on the show in a little bit, and she's going to talk to us about Hanukkah and what it really means and what it's really about. And Hanukkah is going on right now. It began on the evening of December 8th, and I do believe it goes through Sunday the 16th, if I'm correct. There are also the winter solstice which or Yule, as a lot of people have called it throughout time. And the Yule celebration, the solstice celebrations, have been around since the dawn of humanity. And then, of course, there is Christmas. And next week, I'm going to have my good friend, Reverend Audrey Depew, come on and talk about the true meaning of Christmas. And she says she has a great story about the fourth wise man, so I'm looking forward to that. There is also Kwanzaa, for those of you who don't know, and that begins on the 26th day of December, and that is an African-American celebration of the season. So as you can see, and I've probably left someone out, there are lots and lots of holy days in December, in this time of year. New Year's is actually also considered a holy day in many traditions. So happy holy days. And I hope that because we're in a country that was founded on the idea of religious freedom, that we all take a moment to consider how important it is to honor whatever someone's spiritual tradition is. Whatever yours is, I celebrate that and I honor it. And I also hope that we can all begin to honor and celebrate everyone's holy days, because it doesn't matter how we get to God. What matters is that we have a relationship with God. And I have on the line with me now my very good friend, Gloria Biro. She calls herself a former Orthodox Jew who leads multi-generational programs to help people understand their Jewishness. She's also an incredible herbalist and healer and massage therapist and Reiki master, and she does all kinds of amazing things. So welcome, Lori. I'm so happy to have you on the air.
Oh, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. So tell all of us who don't know, what is a dreidel that these guys were having so much fun singing about?
Actually, a dreidel is a top.
A top?
It's a little top. It, you spin it, and then when it's done, it plops down. The top was used because the ancient Greeks played with it as a toy, and when the Jews weren't allowed to practice, they would spin the top and discuss the Talmud and the Torah, and that was their way of studying, and nobody knew what they were doing because it looked like they were playing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I mean, like the kids that I taught to read by showing them Playboy.
Okay, that's not what this show is about.
No, it's all the motivation.
Well, and in your intention, absolutely.
But anyway, the dreidel, it's kind of interesting because there's two kinds of dreidels. There's the dreidels that are outside of Israel. And each side, there's four sides to it, they each have a letter on them. The dreidels outside of Israel have a nun, a gimel, a hey, and a shin. And when you, those are the Hebrew letters, and when you put them together, it says a great miracle happened there.
Wow.
And since 1948, when they created the state of Israel, they made a new dreidel that has nun, gimel, hey, and then pei, which is Nun Gimel Hey Po, the great miracle happened here.
Oh, wow. So it's a teaching top.
You know, it is a teaching. When I teach little kids, that's one of the ways we learn letters.
Uh-huh.
And each of the letters, we used to play with, like, raisins or M&Ms or something. And I would, like, hand out 10 to each kid. And depending when you spin it, it lands on a letter, and each letter has a different purpose.
Uh-huh.
The nun means nothing, means you don't do anything. It's they come from actually Yiddish words. Nun is for nicht, which means nothing in
uh-huh.
Yiddish. Gimel is ganz, which means everything. So whatever's in the pot, that person takes everything.
Uh-huh.
Okay, hey is for halb, which means half of the pot. And shin is for shtetl, which means put in. So you have to put a piece in.
Oh.
So that's the whole. A pole, the pole or the pay means this is the same as the shin.
Well, you know, that is really cool. I mean, I actually knew that a dreidel was a top, but I didn't realize it had so much teaching associated with it.
Well, when I was researching, actually, I didn't realize that shin was for shtetl, which is the communities that the Germans put the Jews in.
And so what does that mean when you are spinning the dreidel when that happens?
It means you put something in.
Uh-huh.
It just means you put something in. You know, when my kids were little at home, we would have a good time with it.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I know, just from the little bit that I know about Jewish religion and Jewish culture, that Hanukkah really wasn't considered one of the Jewish high holy days or anything, but it's become a big thing because it's around the same time as Christmas, and so it just sort of gets melded in with all the holy days that are going on in December. But I was really hoping that you could tell us really what is Hanukkah about, and a little bit of this history. Like, I know that it has something to do with oil, and I know it's about miracles and revolution in a way, but I would love to hear your story of what Hanukkah is.
The true story, not just the little kitty tale. Actually, you're right, though. Hanukkah isn't even mentioned. Leviticus talks about the different feasts that the Jews celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Not even mentioned there. It's mentioned in the Tanakh, which is an even older book. It's more of the ancient history of the Jews, not just what's in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And it is listed there, but you're right, it's not in the Torah. And it didn't become a big deal until Christmas, which was a long time later.
And so for those who don't know, please tell us what the Torah is.
The Torah is, it's the Bible, and it's the different laws. There's actually five different things in the Torah, and it's ancient Hebrew, way ancient Hebrew. It's very difficult to read because there are no vowels in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's chanted, and there's a certain, so you learn the chant. And in learning the chant, you learn the words and figure out the vowels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for our services on Shabbat, the Sabbath. We open the Torah, and it's broken down into thirds. We read it, you know. And it's really interesting, though, because everywhere you go in the world, everyone's reading the same Torah portion.
Mm, that must be powerful.
Yeah, and musicologists have studied it, and they said that everywhere you go, it's the same tropes, it's the same melodies, too. I thought pretty interesting, considering how, you know, the diaspora, you know, how many different places in the world Jews have ended up. But anyway, the history, Israel was, or Judea at the time, it was under the control of, you know, different peoples. And I think it was like, I call it BCE, I guess.
Right.
People call it BCE before the Common Era.
Right.
Jews don't really refer to it as a time before Christ.
Right.
So Israel was under the control of the Greeks because of Alexander the Great.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like 165 or so. And he was pretty tolerant. He let people have practice what they wanted, although it was more of a unifying force for the world. They called it, was it Hellenism or something?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, Hellenism. When he died, he died pretty suddenly. There was a huge scramble for power, and the result was a division in his empire. And as it turned out, in this particular area, there were two different generals that took control. There was Ptolemies, who took control in the south, which was Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And Seleucus, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing this right. It's been a long time since I dealt with this. But he took control in the north, which is today Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they had this like constant tug of war back and forth and back and forth. But eventually, I'll call it Seleucus or Syria because I know I'm pronouncing that right. The Syrian faction won, and they were under the leader of Antiochus IV. Now we're up to about 167 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of a hard butt. He forced assimilation on everybody. The Greek culture was pretty well respected at the time. It wasn't like the lowlifes were, you know, taking control. So, you know, it was a lot of Jews happily assimilated, but, you know, a bunch of them didn't. And he was really kind of mean. He really wanted everybody to follow their way. Their haircuts, the language, it wasn't just religion, it was everything.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing about the Jewish religion, though, is it's my understanding that it's the first monotheistic religion.
Mm-hmm.
The first religion to just have one God. So to tell people that you have to pray to multiple gods, was a big deal. Right. You know, it wasn't just like I'm changing my haircut and, you know, changing my diet, whatever, you know. So some of them went along with it and some of them didn't. What happened was that he got it to the point where he gave an ultimatum. He said, you know, you have to give up all of your ways or you're going to die. Now we're up at about, this is around 168 BCE. He totally marched into Jerusalem with his troops, and he desecrated the temple. Mm. He took all the, you know, the altars, and he took the things off. He took the menorah, and he broke it. And they built a statue of Zeus, and people actually worshiped Zeus there.
Mm-hmm.
They sacrificed pigs, which, you know, kosherdom was a huge big deal to the Jews at the time. The other funny thing was he insisted that his people call him Epiphanes. You know, it was like Antiochus Epiphanes. And Epiphanes meant God manifest.
Right.
So to deal with that, the Jews gave him a nickname of Epimenes. And Epimenes means crazy man.
Oh, that was just like too good.
Right. It was a little town outside of Jerusalem where the revolution, the revolting kind of was crystallizing, and the town was called Modiin. And the Syrian troops kind of went into this town and said, okay, we're making an example out of you. So the plan was, you know, to make a temple. They got to making an altar, and they called the people of the town together and said, okay, you know, we're going to have a ceremony. They picked out the grand rabbi of the area, a man, Mattathias. And Mattathias had five sons. So, you know, they pull him up in front of the town and go, here, lead our pagan service, you know, come slaughter the pig. Mm-hmm. And he totally, he refused. He was, like, freaked out. He was like, you know, no way. This other person came forward and said, I'll do it. I don't know if it was somebody who was more willing, somebody who just wanted to save Mattathias, you know, whatever, but somebody else came up and Mattathias was furious. He killed the guy.
Oh, wow.
And he killed the soldier who was trying to make an example of him. So that was the beginning of the revolt. The people faithful to him, Mattathias and his sons, fled to the hills and to the mountains. You know, people came there to be with them. And they basically only, they really didn't have that many people and, you know, coming up against this big army, but they did guerrilla warfare. So the, and they became known as the Maccabees. And Maccabee means hammer.
Mm-hmm.
They were really significantly outnumbered and were very creative. But, you know, the Jews are the chosen people, and back, you know, deep in their psyche, they said, you know what? God of Israel is the one true God. We are defending him. Mm-hmm. And we will triumph because we're the faithful.
Right.
And they really believed that, and they fought. You know, they were pretty creative about things, and they actually did win.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, we, in Hebrew school, we used to have, like, these mock battles. The kids would, you know, would fight and lay down. It would be very fun. You know, got to get them in. You can't just tell kids a story, you know, you got to get them into it.
Right.
anyway, so once they won, they had this huge problem because now they had to go back into their temple, which had been desecrated, and they're like, oh my God, you know, what are we going to do? So they went and put things together. Now, in the temple, as it is now, we have a menorah, which you put oil in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the menorah. I mean, we call the thing for Hanukkah menorah, but it's really called the Hanukkiah. It's a little bit different, and I'll explain that later. So, but anyway, they went to this menorah, and they found you had to put oil in it to keep it lit. But it was a special oil. It wasn't just, you know, we'll squeeze the olive and put the oil in. And it took 8 days to make the oil. And they only had a tiny little bit of it. So they had this big discussion, you know, what do? Do we wait till we have more oil? I mean, as you said, I come from a religious family, and when my uncles sit around the table, they all went to religious schools, yeshivas, and they love to pick out minutia and discuss it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I'm sure the Jews of the day sat and had these big fights, you know, well, do we save the oil? Do we use what we have? Back and forth and back and forth. But they decided, you know what, we won now. We need to show everybody that we won.
Mm-hmm.
So let's put the oil in and use it now. Make more and, you know, we'll just make do. Figuring the oil would go out, they had a week before Sabbath again, so. But anyway, the oil ended up staying lit until there was more oil. And that was the miracle.
And isn't there a lot, I mean, that seems to be the story that I remember hearing first, is that there wasn't enough oil, but they lit it, and somehow there continued to be enough oil. And that was, it's like, how, is there any story around how that miracle actually happened?
No. It's just a miracle. It's just a little, you know, it's like, you know, if you're cooking and you only have enough to cook, you know, this much, but you got to cook for a week. It's just like, oh my God, how did that happen? Or if you're running the car, you have 1 gallon and yet you can run for a week. You know, oh my God, how that happened?
Right.
So they, you know, it's a blessing. It's a blessing. It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. So they had enough oil to begin their celebration of winning and making their temple sacred again.
Yeah, rededicating their temple.
Rededicating it. And when they lit that oil just kept burning for 8 days, I'm assuming, since there's 8 days, I think it's 8 days of Hanukkah.
Right, right. Well, it took 8 days to make a new batch of oil.
Uh-huh.
And it stayed lit until the new oil was ready.
Wow. That must have felt like, at the time, that must have felt like a real vindication of everything they had done.
Yeah, really. I mean, not only were the Maccabees upset about what happened, you know, from the Syrians, they were really upset that so many Jews assimilated. I mean, you know, they were furious with the Jews who assimilated. The other interesting thing, though, is in the Book of Prophets, the prophet Daniel is actually given a vision way before this even happens about the events that, and he describes them, it's in Daniel, I looked it up, 8:21-22, where he describes his vision of what's going to happen to, in this temple, that there was going to be a big army come and take over, and he just described the impact on Israel to this whole event.
Wow.
Which I didn't know, that was a new one on me.
Uh-huh. And so then, did that begin a celebration then? That's really how Hanukkah began. And then how did it continue? Or is it a fairly recent development that Hanukkah's been celebrated?
Well, the whole present thing is the newer part. Mm-hmm. You know, people celebrated it, but not with so many presents and making a big deal of it. You know, it was more, as Jews, we celebrate through food. You know, everything is about the family and a meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't, or a non-eating, you know, a fast with a meal at the end.
Right.
There is no celebrating a Jewish thing without eating.
Right.
I think Emily Wiesel talks about it. I don't know if it was in a book or when I heard him speak, but he talked about even in the concentration camps that somebody tracked days and they knew when it was Sabbath and they knew when it was Hanukkah and they knew the, you know, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Passover. I mean, they did track days. And they took a moment to just reflect on it, even though they couldn't specifically celebrate.
Well, and isn't it true that the Jewish holidays are tracked lunarly rather than solarly, and so the day of the week or the month, I mean, changes each year based on what's going on with the moon.
Yeah, there's 13 months, and then I forget, once every couple of years is actually an extra month.
Mm-hmm.
With instead, like a leap year kind of thing.
Right. So yeah. Hanukkah is not on the same day or the Sabbath. I mean, Rosh Hashanah, all of those high holy days, they're not on the same day every year. They're depending on the lunar cycle.
Well, the other thing I find funny, I remember growing up, my mom would always say, oh, you know, the holidays earlier this year, you know, or the holidays late this year. And I remember saying, when are they on time? You know, they were always like, it's early November, it's late December, it's never just, you know, on time. I just remember that was pretty funny.
So have you really noticed a change in how Hanukkah is celebrated in your lifetime?
It really seems to be more about, less about the miracle and more Christmassy, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that's how I see it. I don't, see, the spiritual aspect of appreciating the fact that society, once again, was almost wiped out and made it through. And you tried to wipe us out and you didn't.
Right.
And that was probably, I'm not remembering history exactly, I think that was the fourth civilization that tried to wipe out the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
The Nazis weren't the only ones. They were, I think, the seventh.
Right. Right.
Something like that. But, you know, to me, it's more of a spiritual acknowledgement that, you know, we made it through.
Right.
And we're still here. And my kids, we used to just try to spend at least one or two of the nights doing something for society.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're another family that needed something. Because I always thought that was pretty important. It's not about the presence. It's about acknowledging your tradition and that you're still here.
Right. So it's a story of perseverance. It's a story of celebration. It's a story of miracle. You know, I've been aware through various Jewish friends that there's actually a candle lit. And I've seen people who lit a candle on, you know, whatever the first evening was and kept it lit. And I've seen other people who lit a different candle every day. Is that kind of, what do you know about the lighting, the different lights every day?
Well, let me back up. The difference between the menorah in the temple and the sanctuary and the Hanukkah is the Hanukkah, the menorah we use for Hanukkah, has eight candles that are candle holders that are the same height and one that's taller.
Mm-hmm.
It can be on the side, it can be in the middle, but that's called a shamus. So what you do is you light the shamus, and then that candle lights the other candle. So the tradition, the dog's freaking out. A long time, at some point the rabbis had an interesting philosophical discussion about the menorah. Do we light all the candles at once and take away one every day, or do we start with one and then add? And they actually went back and forth for quite a while. And then there used to be a head rabbi from the council, the Sanhedrin. So the head rabbi decided it's better to light one and add to it because that's more optimistic. So that's kind of how that happened.
So the one main candle would be lit on the evening, the first evening. And then
you light the shamus, the middle, you know, the helper candle,
mm-hmm.
the taller one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you light one of the regular of the eight candles the first night.
Uh-huh.
And then second night you would light two. And you don't even put the other ones in the menorah. You only put in the ones that you're lighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's the tradition that I was raised with.
Uh-huh. And does each day or each candle mean something different? Or are they all celebrating that same miracle?
They're all, same thing. You start on the right, because Hebrew you read right to left.
Mm-hmm.
You start on the right, and then you work your way left. The only other thing, the first night, there's three blessings that you would say. The second night, there's two, and then you basically go down to the two of them. One is a general blessing saying, I'm doing what the Torah tells me to do. You know, I'm being observant. I'm looking. Blessed are you, Lord our God, ruler of the universe, who sanctified us with your commandments and commanded us to kindle the lights of Hanukkah. So we do that one. Then the next one is we remember the miracles performed for our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, they also say on Purim. They also say it on the holiday of Purim.
Right.
When another time when somebody tried to wipe out the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
The third one, the blessing, is my favorite. And even when I go into different kinds of circles and I meet people who don't know about Judaism, I like this prayer, the Shehianu it's called. And it basically thanks God for sustaining us and reminds us to appreciate the goodness in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thank you for letting me live to this day and appreciate that I'm still here.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And I really like that prayer. So, you know, there's also, you know, the whole prayer thing. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing we do is eat.
Yes.
Can't not have eating. No, but we do, the foods for Hanukkah are about oil. You know, so there's two main foods that we have. They're latkes, which are potato pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
although I've seen some pretty creative recipes, I've made them with vegetables and not potatoes, you know, and so that's pretty good. And then sokanayao, which are jelly donuts.
Oh my goodness, tell me that word again.
Sokanayao, Hebrew, and it's a plural. I don't even know what the singular is, but donuts, you know. You put some jelly in, and I have never really gotten into the donut thing. The kids never made it past Bacchus, so.
Are you saying fried jelly donuts?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. I understood the fried thing because of the oil.
Yeah, that's...
And do you do the Hanukkah candles yourself? Is that an important ritual for you personally?
Richard and I haven't really done it since the kids are out, mostly because we have a teeny tiny little house,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have room for things, so I don't have room for something that I use once a year. You know, it's really not, but we did, you know, we do stop and acknowledge, you know, that it is a holiday, but none of the kids are even around, so, you know, it's not that big a deal to them. At some point, I guess my son will be home from college, and I'll get my daughter in from Maryland, but, you know, I'll probably, you know, send them something. But
right.
We don't make a big issue of the gifts like Christmas.
Right.
I usually try to do something with them, you know, and get, you know, one-on-one time, and that's what we do now.
So it's much more about that. You know, I want to go back to what you were saying, because in my mind anyway, and I think it's from a story that someone told me many years ago, that for them, Hanukkah was all about revolution and the revolution of the soul, the integrity of standing up and saying, I will honor God the way that I honor God. I don't care. You know, you can do what you want to, but you cannot make me give up my own spirit. And that's the story that has stuck with me all these years, is that for me, Hanukkah is about really having the integrity to honor what's holy for yourself. Have I completely misconstrued that story, or is that really sort of the basis of what that whole revolution was about?
It's about, you know, I think that's great when you say the integrity. It's about a small group of people saying, you know, you're not going to wipe me out because of what I believe.
Right.
My belief is so strong that I will be sustained.
Right.
You know, I mean, and you have to understand as a people how many times that's happened to us.
Oh, yeah. I know.
You know, I mean, it's not just, you know, my kids have a joke. We celebrate holidays. You know, you fill in the blanks. They tried to kill us. They didn't tweet.
God. Well, you know, I want to keep talking to you for just a minute, but I actually have to take a station break here.
Sure.
if you can hold on with me for 1 second, and our show is Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within, and we're here every Wednesday. We talk about what's holy, what's divine, how do we tap into that core truth that's inside of us and begin living from that place. Because when we live from that truth inside of us, it really makes a difference in how healthy and happy and how much vitality we have. And so what we're doing today is we're talking about the various holy days that there are in December, and there are a lot of them. And I have been talking with my good friend Lori Bura, who is in Asheville, North Carolina. And Lori is used to be, according to what she said, an Orthodox Jew. She is quite learned in the Jewish faith and studied Hebrew for many years. And she has been sharing with us what Hanukkah is about. And Hanukkah began last Saturday evening, and I do believe we are in the fifth day of Hanukkah. And I also think of it as a celebration of lights, because it's lighting candles. But it's really a story about a miracle of how oil, that was just a little bit of oil, enough for a little while, lasted for 8 days until more oil could be made. And that is the miracle of Hanukkah. And so I'm wondering, Lori, I just want to first of all say thank you very much for telling us more about it from a much broader perspective than I would ever have. And I wanted to ask you, is there anything else you'd like to share with us about Hanukkah in general, or about Judaism and holy days in general? or anything about how you are actually celebrating this season where so many people in the world are celebrating?
Well, I don't know. I think that it's funny, as we were talking, I was realizing that the story of Hanukkah is really similar to the story of the Jews in America post-World War II. You know, when you think about how much assimilation has happened, even with me, I mean, I used to, my life used to be completely governed by my religion, what I could wear, or, you know, between fabrics and what the clothes looked like, and, you know, married, I wouldn't have had my hair, I would have been wearing wigs, you know, and how far I've come from that. But still, I believe that I hold the core of the religion deep in my heart, you know, the belief that there is a God. I don't believe in the vengeful, guilt-driven one that I was taught about as a kid.
Right.
But I do believe that there is a God. And, you know, now that it's getting dark, I think it's a good time to remember that. You know, that there is this loving being who's there for us, no matter how dark it is. You know, and that's more of the way that I look at it.
Right.
Especially because I'm a gardener and a farmer, and when it gets dark and cold, I can't be out there, you know, and I get crazed. So, you know, it's a way to focus my thoughts and my intentions for the season. You know, it's setting me up with that. And I think that it's important for everybody to stop and appreciate their lives. No matter what, you're breathing, you're alive. I mean, I feel bad. I know there's people being tortured, and I'm horrified by it. And I have friends who lost everything up north, you know, with the storm.
Right.
I've lost an awful lot of family, but I still think the cup's half full.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, the cup's half full.
Right.
And, you know, when it's dark, it's important to have that, to sustain, you know, your life form, or my life form. And I try to, you know, when I do the family programs, when I'm with my kids, I really, that's the message. That's what, you know, I'm hoping as a mother, as a teacher, that's my legacy.
Right.
And it's to appreciate what you've got and what you are. Not to stop striving, but to look at the cup half full.
Right. I think that's a real testament to faith.
Yeah, I think there's still hope for the world. I really do. I still think, you know, a lot of it gets me crazed, but there's just got to be a way around all of this.
Right.
You know, hopefully people stop and think about it. I mean, my latest cause is my food, you know, and what they're doing to our food. And, you know, to stop and pray no matter what you're doing and appreciate. You know, I get in my car and I thank my car, you know. You're old and you still run. You're really cool. And to me, this is what it symbolizes. It's a time when multiple people get together and do that.
Right.
It doesn't matter what your religion is. People stop and say, hey,
right.
You know, this is the time that we're sharing good thoughts.
Yeah. Well, and I think I'm pretty much going to dedicate the rest of the show today to that very idea, because this is the time of year where traditionally, because I think of the dark and the cold, people have come together, partly because they needed to stay warm and feed themselves, but they also needed some hope, some light at the end of the tunnel, if you will. And so there were all these celebrations and different things created to help us remember, you know, the light's going to come back around. And how do we celebrate one another so that we can depend on one another? Because we've always needed to do that as humans. We are social beings, and we need to depend upon one another in order to find that hope when we don't have it.
Or even just basic survival. I mean, you know, you can't be the one growing the food and cooking the food and raising the kids and making the clothes. I mean, even just your basic needs, you know. It's community is what sustained us.
Right.
And if we could all look at each other and think that, as opposed to, what is it George Carlin says? Your bald fat guy is not as right as my, you know, bald fat guy. Bald dead fat guy, you know, something
bald,
like that.
Yeah, bald dead guy, I think that was it. I did.
Yeah, you know.
I did love George Carlin. Well, thank you again so much for your time and for telling us about Hanukkah. I've been thinking about it ever since I lit a candle on Saturday, and I've been wondering whether do I leave that candle lit or do I keep lighting new candles? For me this year, I've just left the candle lit. So next year, I will know that I'm going to light one and then use that to light all the others.
Well, you know, I think it's more the intention than the the way, you know, whatever happens. I think it is all about intention.
Right.
How about really quickly, that prayer that I love, the Shehecheyanu, it's really quick.
Oh, do it.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehegiyanu v'kiyamanu v'hegiyanu l'zman hazeh. Technically, blessed are you, Lord our God, ruler of the universe, who has kept us alive and has preserved us and enabled us to reach this day.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Would you do that again?
In Hebrew?
Yeah, the whole thing, yeah, that was beautiful. It really touched my heart.
Oh, it's Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehegiyanu v'kiyamanu v'hegiyanu l'zman hazeh. My favorite.
And then the translation?
Blessed are you, Lord our God, ruler of the universe, who has kept us alive, shehegiyanu, and has preserved us, v'kiyamanu, and enabled us to reach this time.
Who has enabled us to reach this time. We are blessed. Thank you so much.
And keep warm.
I am keeping warm. I hope you are as well.
Have a great day.
Thank you, honey. Give those daughters of yours especially a big hug and a kiss from me.
Sure, I will.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, I hope you enjoyed that understanding of the miracle of Hanukkah as much as I did. You are listening to Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within. My name is Reverend Louisa Dyer, and I'm your host here every Wednesday. We are talking about holy days in December, and the word holiday is actually an old English word that means holy day. So when someone says happy holidays to you, they are saying happy holy days, and in my opinion, they are being respectful, because who knows what your holy days might be. If you're Jewish, if you're Muslim, if you're Hindu, if you're Buddhist, if you are pagan, if you are, there are a lot of religions out there, and a lot of the holy days get celebrated at this time of year, because this is the time of year of solstice, and solstice is usually the 21st or something like that of December, and winter solstice has been celebrated in cultures all over the world, probably since the beginning of humanity. And what it really is, it's a solar year celebration of light and the rebirth of the sun, because on the day of solstice in the summer and in the winter, it is, in the winter, it's the longest night, and in the summer, it's the longest day. And so after solstice in the winter, the nights get shorter all the way up until the equinox, where the days are the same. The day and the night, I mean, have the same amount of hours. And so traditionally, the winter solstice has been about celebrating the return of that light, and that has mattered to humans a great deal over the history of humanity, especially before we had electric lights. It was a really important thing. And in Europe, in old Europe especially, this time of year was actually known as Yule, which comes from the Norse jewel that means wheel. And so at this time of year, a lot of Western-based cultures just refer to this whole holiday season as Christmas. But if we look at the origins of this time of year and the celebrations that are going on, we discover that they have been around for a really, really, really long time. It was the Emperor Aurelian who established December 25th as the birthday of the invincible sun in the 3rd century as part of the Roman winter solstice celebrations. And it was shortly after that, in 273, that the Christian church selected that day to represent the birthday of Jesus. We don't really know when Jesus was born, but that day was selected by the church in 273 AD, of course, to represent the birthday of Jesus. And by 336, the Roman solar feast day was Christianized. And I think that that happened because there were already so many feasting days going on around the solstice in that time of the year. And the truth is, if you study any history at all, what you will notice is that most of the customs, the symbols, the rituals that are associated with what we think of as Christmas are actually linked to the winter solstice celebrations that were happening a long time before Jesus was actually born. And so Christian mythology, if you will, is interwoven with the contemporary observances of this holiday time. But that history of what was going on long before Jesus was born is still very strong and very apparent. And whether you call it Yule or whether you call it solstice, you know, it doesn't really matter. There is a long, long history of celebrating this time of the year. And I particularly love solstice because of that meaning of the return to the light. That's what it really means to me, because it's the darkest. The solstice, winter solstice, is the longest night of the year, and then every night after that, there is more sun every day. There's more light. And next to Easter, it's my favorite holiday. Easter, of course, meaning resurrection. But the solstice is really about a new year, a new light, a new waking up and coming into what you think of as what you're going to do with this new light that's coming in. How is that going to affect your life? I also look at the equinox and solstice cycles in terms of what they mean from what I know about working with nature. Because from nature's perspective, the fall equinox is actually what begins the new year. And the winter solstice is like the second stage of that cycle of life vitality that is being poured into the planning and design of the new year. And really, this time of year has traditionally been a time to go inside. You know, in ancient cultures, the sun went down really quick. We did not have electricity, and so you tended to go to bed early and sleep late because nights were longer. And so it was a time for going inward. It was a time for contemplation. It was a time for snuggling up around the hearth with the people that you loved. And the harvest was already done, and you were waiting on spring to begin again. And it was often a hard time of year because it was cold in this hemisphere, and there wasn't a lot of light, so people weren't doing a lot outside. And so I think as humans, we're very resourceful, and so we create ways to make ourselves feel better. And so we created festivals and ways to celebrate coming together and being close and celebrating the idea that, yes, it may be dark right now, but the light is going to return. How do I know that? Because the light always does. I mean, that's just what happens. The light always returns. So that winter solstice has been celebrated for a really long time, and like I said, it's had a lot of different names through the years. Yule, Y-U-L-E, has been going on pretty much since the dawn of humanity, and actually in ancient cultures that celebration lasted more than a day. The ancient Roman festival called Saturnalia sometimes went on for a week, And we can do all of those things, but I think for me, it's really about going inside and getting clear with what you hold sacred. Personally, I think that's the point of all the holy days, no matter what we call them, no matter what they're celebrating, is holy days are a way to honor what we think of as sacred, what really matters to us, and a way to celebrate that. And so it's very exciting, I think, this time of year, because people are naturally, because it's our history as a human race, people are naturally wanting to be cheerful and happy, to sort of bring themselves up so they don't get stuck in the darkness of the season. And so that's why we've always brought in, you know, greenery into the home and decorated with red berries, and because those have always been the colors of the season, the red and the green and the white. So whether it's holly or ivy or evergreen boughs of some kind or pine cones, it's like it reminds us that life goes on, even though there's not much light and it's a lot of dark. That gives us faith that there's going to be springtime again. And it's been so for as long as we've had written human history, that people would bring in sprigs of mistletoe as a good luck charm for the coming new year. And so a lot of the ways that we celebrate Christmas with gift giving and the trees and the colors and all of that has been around long since before Christianity. And it was often called either a Yule. I'm sure you've heard of the Yule log, Y-U-L-E, and the solstice celebrations. It's really the beginning. It's like the rebirth of the sun. That's how I always think of it. And that whole idea that we have at Christmas time of Santa Claus, I think, is interesting, because that image has actually been around also probably from the dawn of human history. That image of Santa came from a lot of different traditions. He first of all embraces the characteristics of Saturn, who was a Roman agricultural god, and also a Kronos, who was a Greek god known as Father Time, but also the Holly King, which was a Celtic god of the dying year, also the Father Ice, Grandfather Frost, which is a Russian winter god, also Thor, which was a Norse sky god who rides in a chariot drawn by goats. And then there was Odin, or Wotan, which was a Scandinavian Teutonic all-father kind of figure who rides the sky on an eight-legged horse. And there was a Norse fertility god named Frey. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. The images that we have today, you know, we modernize them and they change year to year, or culture to culture, or century to century. Traditions have been there since long before the birth of Christ. They've been there since the beginning of humanity. And I think they're there for the very simple reason that we as humans need something to give us hope for a brighter day. We actually need something to help us look forward to warmth and springtime. And so we use this time of year as a way to come together and be with friends and family, to bring in aspects of nature like, you know, green boughs or red hollies, to remind us and uplift us. And we exchange gifts to say, here, I'm generous and I'm prosperous and I want to share this with you. And the truth is that in a lot of the ancient cultures at this time of year, very interesting things were done at this time of year, because the animals that weren't going to make it over the rest of the year were slaughtered, and so there were feasts that happened. And then there was also a lot of community work come together, because they would dry the meat or put away the vegetables. And It was just the time for coming together to get warm, if nothing else, but to figure out a way to survive the lean times where there's not a lot growing outside, and you have to survive on what you have stored up, and you have to stay warm by being close with those that you love. So I could talk a lot about where the solstices come from and all the different cultures that it's been in, but that wasn't really my intention today. My intention was to just to remind everybody that, first of all, when you hear the phrase happy holiday, it means happy holy day, and that we are a country that is founded on religious freedom. And I personally believe it's vitally important that we honor whatever somebody's spiritual belief is. And so your holy day may not be my holy day, but I can honor the fact that it is a holy day for you. And so December, like I said before, is absolutely filled with those holy days. And this idea of the winter solstice and how that has been celebrated throughout time, it was even celebrated in Neolithic times. And I mean, you can tell this if you just look at some of the physical remains that have been left behind from the Neolithic and the Bronze Age at Stonehenge and Newgrange. Stonehenge, of course, is in Britain, and Newgrange is in Ireland. And all these amazing testaments are there to say that even then people were looking at how to know when that date was, so because then after that they knew that they could move forward. And so it's this midwinter festival in temperate climates was always the last feast celebration before the deep winter began, so that most of the cattle were slaughtered and so they wouldn't have to be fed during the winter, and so the people would have something to eat. And the majority of the wine and the beer were made during this time of year, and it was fermented and ready for drinking by now. It was just a way of coming together and celebrating life, even though it was the darkest time of the year. So I think these winter holy days are a lot about faith, and they're a lot about looking forward to the light. And what's really happening at this time of year is it's the reversal of the sun's ebbing, meaning that the sun is getting ready to be reborn again. We're getting ready to have more light as each day happens after the solstice. And so because of that whole concept of the year being reborn, the light being reborn, then there's a whole lot of life, death, rebirth, or new beginning traditions that became established in a lot of different cultures. And the new year itself, with our particular calendar, is sort of just an extension of that. And so we don't really need to talk about all those myths and all of that kind of stuff, because I think you get the idea. December is a time of many, many holy days, and I hope you honor what is sacred for you, and I hope you respect what is sacred for other people. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I've had such a wonderful time today talking about all the holy days that there are in December, and I just want to let everyone know that part of how my show stays on the air is with underwriting and with support from listeners, which I am so incredibly grateful for. And support comes for this show from Conscious Dancer Magazine. And they have a movement map on their ConsciousDancer.com website that is your source for holistic movement. The tagline is Movement for a Better World. And so if you want to move in a conscious way, you can look at their movement map and find all kinds of things that are happening wherever you are visiting or living. And that website will show you all the wonderful places there are to get your body, mind, and spirit moving together. And that website again is www.movement.com. ConsciousDancer.com. I also want to let everyone know that I am so incredibly grateful for all the donations that I've gotten for this show, and you're certainly welcome to send more of those in if you would like to. You can do that on the website or by calling. I want to let everyone know that if you have a business that you would like to underwrite on WAIF, we offer very cost-friendly rates to do that. You can target your underwriting to any show that you choose, and just call one of our underwriting experts today at 513-351-1538 or 513-226-5585 and find out how you can get your business information to our listeners. The cost of underwriting is very affordable. You can underwrite and definitely stay within your budget. WAIF will help you reach our community with your message. I have a Facebook page for this show by the same name called Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within, and I really, really would love it if you're on Facebook. If you interacted on that Facebook page, tell us what you would like to hear on the show. Tell us what your stories are. I really want to share more personal stories, aha moments, things that have woken you up, times in your life that have made all the difference in the world. When you've really felt good about who you are and how that happened, I think it is so vitally important for us to share our stories with one another to uplift and inspire and encourage each other. It's so much more powerful, I think, than reading a book. And if you want to share a story of your own, you can do that on the radio by telephone, or you can come into the station if you are in the area. And our listeners would love to hear your story. I can promise you that. We have talked today about the various holy days in December, and I don't want to leave out Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is a week-long celebration that is held in the United States and Canada most typically, and it was actually created in 1966 as the first specifically African-American holiday by a man named Malana Karanga. I do hope I'm saying his name right. And he said that his goal was to give blacks an alternative to the existing holiday and give blacks an opportunity to celebrate themselves and their history rather than simply imitate the practice of the dominant society. And that name, Kwanzaa, derives from the Swahili phrase, which means fruits of the harvest. And the choice of Swahili, which is an East African language, reflects its status as a symbol of pan-Africanism, which was established in the 60s. Kwanzaa, as a celebration, I guess, has its roots in the Black Nationalist Movement of the 1960s, and it was really established as a means to help African Americans reconnect with their African cultural and historical heritage by uniting in meditation and study of African traditions and of the seven principles of African heritage, which Karanga said is a communitarian African philosophy. And so Kwanzaa has gone through a number of shifts and changes over the years, but it is still celebrated today. And there are seven principles of Kwanzaa, and I just want to tell you briefly what those are. First of all, Kwanzaa is celebrated from the 26th of December to January 1st. The seven principles of Kwanzaa are quite beautiful, and I think they really encapsulate the best of human nature. The seven principles. Each of the 7 days of Kwanzaa is dedicated to one of the following principles. Unity, to strive for and to maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. Self-determination, to define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak up for ourselves. Collective work and responsibility, to build and maintain our community together and make our brothers and sisters' problems our problems and to solve them together. cooperative economics to build and maintain our own stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. Purpose, to make our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. And the sixth one is creativity, to do always as much as we can in the way that we can in order to leave our community more beautiful and beneficial than we inherited it. And the last principle of Kwanzaa is faith, and that is to believe with all of our hearts in God, our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and the righteousness and the victory of our struggle. Kwanzaa's symbols include a decorative mat on which other symbols are placed. And there's candles, there's corn, there's a lot of different things. There's a cup usually for pouring libations, which is, you know, like liquid blessings, if you will. And the colors are black and red and green. And all these symbols represent those seven principles. And so there's a lot of ways to celebrate Kwanzaa. And at one point, somebody was saying that they thought there were probably, you know, 20 million people celebrating Kwanzaa. And there was actually a stamp, a postage stamp, that was commemorating Kwanzaa that was issued in 1997. The artwork on it is Cynthia St. James. And there was a second stamp, I believe, in 2004 that was issued that has seven figures in really colorful robes that's symbolizing the seven principles. And that holiday has also spread to Canada and is celebrated by Black Canadians as well. And so that's just a little tiny bit about Kwanzaa, which is from the 26th of December to the 1st of January, an African-American holiday. There is Christmas, of course, on the 25th. There is Hanukkah, which this year began on December the 8th and goes through the 16th. There is Solstice, which is the 21st. There's something to be said for celebrating it at the exact time of the solstice, because nature itself puts off particular energies at that time. And so I just want to close the show today with reminding everyone that all holy days are sacred to someone, and that if we want to be loving, giving, beautiful people, we will honor what everyone wants to honor for their own holy day. There is nothing wrong with someone having a different holy day than yours. It is all sacred, and there is one God, and we are all in touch with that one God, no matter if we have 1,000 names for it. And so we're going to close out the show today, as we always do, by hearing Faith Rivera's God Is. And I'm so happy that I will see you back here next week. I hope you join me then. Enjoy, and I will see you soon. Blessings and happy holy days. Where I am.